Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
These children are going to the most glamorous of all summer camps, Camp Mohawk. There's a two-year waiting list, and every child has to be voted in. On top of all that, it costs $1,000 a week to go to Camp Mohawk. The question is it worth $1,000 a week?
It sure is. It's the best darn camp there is.
Well, are you connected with Camp Mohawk?
Well, I think so. I'm the program director.
Well, how do you justify $1,000 a week?
Well, we have some special programs. We're doing Shakespeare in the Round again this year, of course. Our political roundtable, Henry Kissinger, will appear. He's going to come out, spend the weekend with the kids, just rap with them.
That's amazing.
And the kids wanted animals, so this year each camper will stalk and kill his own bear in our private wildlife preserve.
Are you sure the children can hack that?
We'll see. But the real excitement, of course, is going to come at the end of the summer, during Sexual Awareness Week. We import 200 hookers from around the world, and each camper, armed with only a thermos of coffee and $2,000 cash, tries to visit as many countries as he can. And the winner, of course, is named King of Sexual Awareness Week and is allowed to rape and pillage the neighboring towns until camp ends.
That's incredible.
What do you expect for $1,000 a week? Hey, you have a good summer, too, huh?
Oh, one of my favorite movies when I was a kid. I'm sure you guys can figure out what that film was. That was classic, Bill Murray. With Camp North Star. In the famous movie Meatballs. I love that monologue he gives. What I love about that is that I own the DVD to Meatballs. Yes, I know some people have a DVD, you know, the DVD collection to The Great Gatsby. They probably have All About Eve. Some people have Gone with the Wind. No, I own the DVD to Meatballs and Roll Bounce starring Bow Wow. That is me. That is Reese on the Radio. Right here, 2 minutes after the hour on blogtalkradio.com. It's August the 7th, 2012. My long-lost cousin's birthday today. I haven't talked to him in eons. Troy, happy birthday to you. That is one of my favorite movies. I watch it all the time. One of the rare films starring Chris Makepeace. Lord knows where he is now. Chris Makepeace, who is also in another one of my favorite movies, starring Matt Dillon, The Bodyguard. William Baldwin. Joan Cusack. I'm trying to remember some of the people in that movie. But yes, Chris Martin Mull, also in that film. Yeah, I keep up with all the rarities. I'm a cult classic kind of guy. The real rare movies that are out there, I follow that stuff. And Meatballs is one of those movies that really emotionally affect me as a kid, because I remember going to sleepaway camp. And I remember what that was like, going to camp. I know that's an experience that normal kids went through growing up. At least when I was growing up, that was a normalcy. You know, that was the route of most kids, that most kids went to. Summer camp was going away. You do 2 weeks in some town, and you do, you know, you go out there, you learn how to swim, you learn how to make crafts. That's what that was about growing up. And as a poor kid, when I got the opportunity to go to summer camp, sleepaway camp as we called it when we were kids, I loved it. And it's one of those experiences that I cherished growing up. I went to a day camp when I was a kid. It was Robin Hood Day Camp. And I did a lot there. When I went to Robin Hood Day Camp, that was a lot of fun, too. I don't know if they're still around. Maybe somebody can tell me if Robin Hood Day Camp is still around. We're talking when I was like at least 6 years old. So some 30, close to 40 years ago was Robin Hood Day Camp. It was a big deal to me when I was growing up. But Meatballs, I had to play that monologue. It's one of my favorites. I have to say, probably the most famous
of all of those pieces, if you can indulge me for a little bit, I'm almost certain this is it.
Sure, Mohawk has beaten us 12 years in a row. Sure, they're terrific athletes. They've got the best equipment that money can buy. Hell, every team they're sending over here has their own personal masseuse.
Not a sir, masseuse.
But it doesn't matter. Do you know that every Mohawk competitor has an electrocardiogram, blood and urine test every 48 hours to see if there's any change in his physical condition? Do you know that they use the most sophisticated training methods from the Soviet Union, East and West Germany, and the newest Olympic power, Trinidad Tobago? But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. I tell you, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Even if we win, even if we play so far over our heads that our noses bleed for a week to 10 days, even if God in heaven above comes down and points his hand at our side of the field, even if every man, woman, and child held hands together and prayed for us to win, it just wouldn't matter, because all the really good-looking girls would still go out with a guy from Mohawk because they got all the money. It just doesn't matter if we win or we lose. It just doesn't matter.
Oddly enough, folks, I'm going to tell you something funny. I'm going to tell you something crazy. When I get scared, when I get nervous, when I feel down on myself, I watch this movie just for that scene. It just doesn't matter whether or not we win or lose. Just go out there and give it your all. I think that's kind of what it is that he's saying. What I love about that DVD, I watch it over and over again, is when I find out behind the scenes that Bill Murray had certain cue cards that were standing around the set, and he was literally doing that off the top of his head and just grabbing those little quotes that were on the side on the cue cards and just going off the top of his head. And people, you hear them giggling. It was sort of infectious the way he was doing that. Now, why am I bringing this up? For no reason. I promise you, for no reason whatsoever. But it came to me today when I was thinking about, you know, my life and things like that. And the movie came on not too long ago. I literally just recorded that off the television. A couple of days ago it was on, and I sat here over the weekend, sat here and watched that movie over and over again. I still get choked up on the same parts. I still get emotional on the same part. I still get a lump in my throat when Woody the Wabbit, the winner, runs across that finish line when he wins the race at the end and everybody picks him up. I still get a lump in my throat. You know, because the underdog wins. And I guess it's sort of an emotional thing to me, but I was reminiscing about that today, just thinking about life and how much that movie inspires me. Yes, it's a screwball comedy, but I look beyond that. Again, like I said, I love the rarities. I love the rarities. It's the reason why I like that movie, The Bodyguard, because it's one of those really, really rare stories in life that catch my attention. And, of course, I like making Chris Make Peace references, because where's the guy been? Come on. Don't you miss him? Those are two great movies he was in, and I miss the guy. He mattered to me when I was a kid. I know that sounds awkward, but, you know. That's just me going off. So anyway, my point being, I just wanted to pay a little homage to the movie Meatballs, Bill Murray, how he affected my life growing up, how important he was in that film to me as a child, and how I never forgot it. Still, at age 42, going on 43, still watch that movie whenever it's on. And it is a classic. I don't know if anybody out there agrees with me or has ever seen the movie recently or has even bothered to check out the movie. But trust me, watch that movie. You'll see what it is that I'm talking about that's really, truly inspiring about that. Forget about all the, you know, the teen sort of, you know, the sex, all the guys wanting to hook up. That's all cool and whatnot. I wasn't that kid growing up. As you all know, I was the nerd, the odd man out. You know, I wasn't worried about hooking up. The only thing I wanted to do was be like Rudy. I wanted to make a friend. Bill Murray has a great line in the movie when they're at the diner when, you know, Rudy Werner wants to leave. He was at the bus station. He says, if you make one friend, man, you're doing all right at camp. And he made one good friend. He wasn't a father figure. He was like a brother to him, somebody who believed in him, and someone who gave him a shot. And I think we all feel like that when we're down and out. Somebody out there to give us a shot. Somebody out there to inspire us. Somebody out there to make us feel like we belong. And I think we all go through it. God, is this sounding depressing. But I want to say something inspiring at the same time. But when I think about that movie, I think about that all the time. And sometimes I need to revert back to that. I think we all do. Because sometimes times are trying. And we all need that sort of pick-me-up. So I would request that each and every one of you, I don't care how corny you think it is, but seriously, sit down one day. If you can, I don't think you can find it on Netflix, but find it where you can and check it out. Watch the movie again. Go back to your childhood. Go back to that moment. Go back to that time where things were a little different. Yes, it's the 70s. It's not the worst. But try to go back to that time. Try to go back to the time where things were different. And you'll understand where it is that I'm coming, where I'm coming from. Meatballs, it's a great movie. It was a great experience for me, and it's a great experience every time I watch it. And maybe there are some people out there who will feel the same way that I do if they watch it again. Maybe you'll tear up. There are a few films that make me tear up. There are a few. But the ones that do, the ones that make me tear up and get a little choked up, this is one of them. God, I know that people are going to be like, really, Meatballs? Trust me. Sit there by yourself. Don't sit with anybody that's going to rag on or whatever. Be alone and watch that movie. Listen to that song when Bill Murray and Chris Makepeace are jogging, where the girl is singing, I could be your best friend. You can't help but go, with somebody. You can't help it. I get a little choked up when I hear it. It's just one of those movies. You got to be by yourself, though. Or maybe with your girlfriend. If she's a bitch, don't hang with her and watch this. She's got to be a girl who's sensitive, who understands that. As a guy. And if you're a girl and you've never seen this movie, sit down and watch it. I know. Trust me. If there's anything I know that the wifey, she'll be crying. All right? That woman cries at a Kleenex commercial. She cries at anything. Absolutely. Okay? Seriously. Worst crier in the world. I have to catch her. I have to look sometimes. Like, it was a ketchup commercial. What are you crying about? No, seriously.
We'll get into that later. Let me take her wrath right now.
It's Reach on the Radio. Hey, Mayor.
Hello.
So,
hello.
Yes, I'm here. Have you ever seen the movie Meatballs, dear? Are you there?
Hello.
Yes, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry, I muted you by accident. Yeah, that smacked you. All that smack you were talking a second ago.
Hey, come on, I'm just the truth. Try a Kleenex.
Yes, I know. I require a Kleenex on a ketchup commercial. I heard you loud and clear. Everybody else did too.
But have you ever seen the movie?
Meatball?
Yes, I've seen the movie Meatballs. I'm sorry, you're breaking up. You're going in and out. What was that? You're breaking up, Reese. Hello? Fix your mic, because I don't know. I've got full signal on my phone, so.
When was the last time you seen the movie Meatballs?
Oh, I don't remember. What? No, we were watching something else the other day that was similar to Meatballs, right?
Yeah, that movie's called Screwballs.
Screwballs, okay. So, no, I couldn't tell you when the last time I saw Meatballs was. It was, you know, a gazillion years ago.
Exactly. That's my point. There's nobody out there who's seen it. It's sad, but true. I suggest that everyone watch it again. But I want to pay. I want to do a little homage to them for a little bit. We've got, you know, but I like I said, rare films, it's rarity. It's one of the ones that I love, and I just wanted to show it with some respect.
So, wait, can you get this movie on Netflix?
No, you can't, unfortunately.
Okay, so on Hulu, anything?
I'll try to find it for you so you can watch it.
Okay, so we can watch it together, and then I can rant on you for crying?
I didn't cry. I said I could know something by the way.
You said...
I said nothing. I'm going to put you on hold. Not going to expose me. I just sat up here and told everybody that I get choked up. And maybe a tear. It's an important movie. Some of you may not think it is, but it is. It's a very, very sweet film. Stars Chris Makepeace, for crying out loud. Chris Makepeace! We'll take a break. We'll be back. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we continue. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. Going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we're going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air?
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now, okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you're enjoying.
The adult beverage? Yeah, I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh, yes.
You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211 Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve, and it's called 211 for that matter, is that the police code, 211, means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama is attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union, but you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward in the state of our union this morning.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
What is a boy to do?
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it. L-O-V-E-I.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Reese on the Radio, we have returned 24 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. August the 7th, 2012. So, here we go. Let's get into it.
Now, look, I expect every political campaign to be vicious. I want it to be evil. I want it to be vicious. I'm not the kind of guy who gets hell-bent or, you know, pissed off when somebody does something vile in a presidential campaign. I want the daggers out. Everybody does. Everybody wants the daggers out. All of you out there who were punks, wusses, who get mad when the daggers come out, oh, can we make this a little more civil? Those people out of the way. So you have to see how vile these individuals are going to get. But see, when they get vile, to me, it's based on what's fact and what's fiction. See, if you're vicious based on fact, then I go, yeah! If you're vicious based on fiction, then I go, boo, that was awful. But I love it nonetheless because I want to see how desperate. I always want to see how desperate the bad guy is. So when you go to the movies, watch any movie. If you pay attention to any film, Hollywood does this the best. It's usually the bad guy who strikes first with the most vicious attack. He does something so vile that the good guy has no reason but to respond. And we all look at the good guy when he responds and say, okay, that's warranted. Because look at what the bad guy did. I'll give you an example. Another favorite film of mine by a director I hate, Brian De Palma, called The Untouchables. Now, you remember the famous Academy Award-winning scene by Sean Connery when he's shot and killed by Frank Nitti. And he's dragging down his hallway as he dies. Sean Connery is, for that matter, after he's shot with a Tommy gun. And then Kevin Costner, Elliot Ness shows up at the house and, you know, trying to find out the information in his last dying words. You know, Sean Connery says, what are you prepared to do? What are you prepared to do? What are you prepared to do?
Yeah, that part.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just know this movie too well. And then later on in the end of the movie, Kevin Costner gets into this little shootout, you know, this little tete-a-tete with Frank Nitti near the end of the movie, and he takes Frank Nitti, and he tosses him off a building and ends up in the car. Now, you know that whole thing is only made up to say, hey, look at the revenge Kevin Costner got for his friend. Kevin Costner, the good guy, is Elliot Ness, tosses Frank Nitti off a building. And his death is supposed to be more horrific than the Tommy gun shooting of Sean Connery. That's the way Hollywood works. But see, politics, it's different. Politics are different. See, in politics, it's about the last word. It's about who's got the most vicious attack and which one is the long, which one lasts the longest, which one resonates the best. And that happened today. With this ad, buy a super PAC. The Obama super PAC put out an ad today. And this ad pretty much says that Romney killed somebody. Oh, yeah. You think I'm BSing? You think I'm BSing? It's all anyone's talking about today. Romney is responsible for a woman's death. Yeah, absolutely. President Obama's super PAC, I think it's called Priorities America or some crap, they put out an ad that pretty much says that Romney is responsible for the death of some woman. Listen for yourself.
I don't think Mitt Romney understands what he's done to people's lives by closing the plant. I don't think he realizes that people's lives completely changed. When Mitt Romney and Bain closed the plant, I lost my health care. And my family lost their health care. And a short time after that, my wife became ill. I don't know how long she was sick. And I think maybe she didn't say anything because she knew that we couldn't afford the insurance. And then one day she became ill, and I took her up to the Jackson County Hospital and admitted her for pneumonia, and that's when they found the cancer. And by then it was stage four. There was nothing they could do for her. And she passed away in 22 days. I do not think Mitt Romney realizes what he's done to anyone. And I do not think Mitt Romney is concerned.
Priorities USA Action is responsible for the content of this advertising.
This guy is flat out saying that Romney is responsible for killing his wife. There's no other way to put it. Now, let me give you a little background here. I've got to give you a little background. Apparently, Bain Capital bought this steel mill. Right? Romney was out of Bain Capital in 1999. The steel mill closed in 2002, I believe. 2001, 2002. I don't even think it was any earlier than 2002, but it closed in 2002, some 2 years after Romney left. His wife developed cancer and died in 2006. But Priorities USA, and I said that wrong, Priorities America, Priority USA, the super PAC, who put this ad out, they totally omit that. But they're saying that because Bain Capital, which is associated with Romney, closed down the plant, Romney is in some way responsible for this woman's death. So the daggers are out. The daggers are clearly out. Now, Mayor, is this crazy or what?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this nigga is bugging. That's what I gotta say. These jokers are out of their minds. How in the... Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. How in the... You have to excuse the noise, everybody, because I am in my car on my way home. So, how many... What are they talking about? So, how many other people... So, he must be responsible for genocide, because I'm sure there's more than just that one lady that died, and it's Mitt Romney's responsibility because they couldn't afford health care. You don't know. So you have a job. You can't make a payment plan at a doctor. You can't do – get the F out of here.
He said that his wife never told anybody how sick she was. So by the time she actually went to a doctor, she was in stage four. She died some days later. That's the part I don't get. She died in 2006. So you're saying when she finally decided to tell somebody, I'm sick, it's his fault? I mean, come on. You want to talk about, like, loosely attaching something to a presidential candidate? Come on.
You want to talk about placing blame and not, you know, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And how could anybody in their right mind even believe that, even, you know, why would you even make something like that? Who made this? The Obama Super PAC?
Yes. Obama Super PAC did it. They were the ones who put this together. I can't believe that somebody did.
Okay, so can we blame Obama and his administration for not watching over the Medicaid and screwing up my aunt's Medicaid, and she couldn't get any health coverage, and by the time she found out that she had cancer, she was in stage four, and there's not even stage four because the cancer she has is only in two stages, either advanced or not, and hers was advanced. And luckily, and the reason why she didn't have health insurance was because Medicaid screwed up her paperwork and denied her, and she wasn't supposed to be denied. And I'm sorry, isn't Medicaid run by the state government, and isn't the state government supposed to be watched by the president and their administration? I mean, isn't there, how many people are held accountable for that? What if my aunt would have just died? What if she wouldn't have, you know, what if the chemotherapy that she was finally able to get once they fixed her Medicaid that she had been trying to get for years and years, what if she would have died? Can I blame Obama and his administration for her death?
according to Priorities USA, you can attribute any death to anybody you want to, which is clear in this. It's obviously clear. You can attribute anybody's death to anybody as long as they were associated. It's guilt by association. That's the bottom line.
But how? Okay, so how does this story really play out? What exactly are they talking about? They're talking about Romney being tied to Bain Capital.
Right. And the decisions that were made at Bain Capital after he left, it doesn't matter because he worked there and because he was the CEO there, it's still his fault because he worked there.
So, okay, why? Wait. If they needed health insurance, why wasn't it this husband's responsibility to go out and get a job?
He did.
Go out and get a job where he could afford to purchase health care for his family, because this sounds like another, you know, Derek issue. Okay. You couldn't afford to go out and get health care on your own, or at least at a minimum for your wife.
Okay, now the caption reads inside the commercial, because the commercial has those, you know, those written captions on it. It says Joe eventually found work as a custodian. The job paid less than half his previous salary. So he did have a job.
So did his job offer health insurance?
That's not determined in this article. It's only determined that, oh, because Romney got rid of the steam mill, or for that matter, the Bain Capital did, got rid of his job, he was forced to get a job that only paid less than half or half his salary, that he couldn't take care of his wife, and therefore that's Romney's fault too.
You know, I feel sorry for the man. He lost his wife. I couldn't imagine losing my husband. I mean, you know, I could never even fathom that thought. But you can't be blaming Romney for that shit. You can't blame anybody for that shit but yourself, because you were the man in the household. If your wife was a stay-at-home mother or a stay-at-home wife and you didn't go out there and get two or three jobs so that you could afford health insurance wasn't that important to your ass before your wife decided to tell you that she had cancer.
Yeah, that's not,
because
by the way,
that important.
By the way, that's nobody's fault but Romney's, by the way, that she never told. She never told anybody that she was sick. That's Romney's fault, too. Nobody's taking any personal responsibility here. That's Romney's fault. He only got a job as a custodian, which paid half the salary. That's Romney's fault,
too. This was in 2006, right?
2006 is when she passed away.
Okay, so are we going to blame Bush because the guy couldn't find a better paying job?
You probably could. You could probably say in 2006 he couldn't find a better job because of the Bush administration. I mean, they can do this to anybody they want to.
And how about all the people that are out of jobs and have nothing anymore since Obama has been in office? I mean, what are we going to put on him? What can we blame on him? We're talking about this man not having health insurance, or they're talking about this man not having health insurance because he had to get a job as a damn custodian because Bain Capital decided to close down a plant or a steel mill that wasn't producing, that didn't allow them to keep it open, so they had to close it down. That's the way business works.
They don't care about
it. It's either successful or it's not. And if it's not successful, what do you want to take everybody down? You can't do that. And it's your responsibility to go out there and find a job or three or four jobs if you need to. Mexicans work, 14 jobs a day. They don't sleep for half an hour. And they got houses. They got Medicaid. They got houses in other countries. They living like sardines in a can here. I mean,
you're absolutely right. They make the sacrifices that have to be made to take care of their own. You're absolutely right. But again, not according to Priorities USA, this is how low they're willing to go. Romney is responsible because he worked at Bain Capital, and Bain Capital closed down. It doesn't matter whether or not he left or not. You're attached to him, and it's your fault my wife died.
Well, Priorities USA, with the name Priorities, hence the name Priorities USA, get your shit together.
Here's the ad again.
But your priorities are screwed up.
We'll take a break, but here's the ad again. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We got more coming up on Recent Radio.
I don't think Mitt Romney understands what he's done to people's lives by closing the Klan. I don't think he realizes that people's lives completely changed. When Mitt Romney and Bain closed the Klan, I lost my health care. And my family lost their health care. And a short time after that, my wife became ill. I don't know how long she was sick. And I think maybe she didn't say anything because she knew that we couldn't afford the insurance. And then one day she became ill, and I took her up to the Jackson County Hospital and admitted her for pneumonia, and that's when they found the cancer. And by then it was stage four. There was nothing they could do for her. And she passed away in 22 days. I do not think Mitt Romney realizes what he's done to anyone. And I do not think Mitt Romney is concerned.
Priorities USA Action is responsible for the content of this advertising.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going backwards. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gottavote.org to register now. That's gottavote.org.
You know we've got your back.
Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Reese on the Radio.
He said, "I am the Joker."
But once again, he was still walking into a movie theater that was showing the Batman.
So you're saying that this guy would have done what he has done, even if, like, Steel Magnolia was playing?
He just said, "I'm the Steel Magnolia."
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
If I don't recognize your name, you're Rod Nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is, but she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. Michael Simon. Never forget it. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's him.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
so he's dressed like the chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, yes.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest types. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyist.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work at my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. She's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointing to the number two position at the Defense Department a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com. Reese on the Radio, and we're back 47 minutes after the hour. About a cool 13 minutes to the top of the hour, and we will get to a bunch of other pressing stories that are in the news. An interview with Rachel, the young lady at the Chick-fil-A, who got that barrage of insults by Adam Smith, was on Neil Cavuto's show. She was actually interviewed by Stuart Varney. The Fox Business Network today. We'll have that audio at the top of the hour, and we will discuss that interview and what you had to say. And, of course, Rachel proves my point, but I'll get into that at the top of the hour. John Lovitz, as you may recall, had that epic rant about Barack Obama at his comedy club. And John Lovitz, who's, of course, famed Saturday Night Live cast member, was doing his show. He was doing a podcast, a live podcast with Kevin Smith, director Kevin Smith, where he was pretty much ripping Obama apart for the whole idea of, you know, whether or not, you know, he was paying his fair share of taxes. You know, building his business, making money, and whether or not he was paying his fair share. He ripped President Obama apart, and he's kind of been interviewed about what it is that he said and about whether or not, you know, how he really, really felt. And he pretty much expressed, look, this is all a sham. He's fooling the American public. He's lying to them. He's using class warfare. And John Lovitz openly admitted, hey, I voted for the guy, and I believe his story is incredible. The guy, you know, guy came from nothing, came from nowhere, becomes the president of the United States. He says all that. But now John Lovitz tells another story, which I knew was going to happen, as I'm sure most conservatives knew was going to happen. He's been receiving death threats. This is a story logged by Christian Toto of Breitbart.com. John Lovitz spent much of George W. Bush's presidency doing what nearly all of his peers did, making fun of the commander-in-chief, and no one said a peep. When a Saturday Night Live alum chided President Barack Obama for saying the rich don't pay their fair share earlier this year, he ended up letting a security escort walk him to his car. Lovitz tells Big Hollywood that his now infamous podcast rant against Obama's class warfare rhetoric led to death threats left on the voicemail of his University City-based comedy club. "I know where you eat," one message warned. The comedian, who owns the John Lovitz Comedy Club and Podcast Theater, said he isn't concerned about his safety. He is riled up, however, about the media, his fellow Democrats, and why questioning the president's policies mean complete strangers now accuse him of being racist. The wide-ranging discussion with Big Hollywood also touched on his evolving views on business and the public's reaction to his Obama critiques. The real story, as Lovitz sees it, is how the press is going after comedians. He praised two other conservative media outlets for their coverage of his Obama comments. Your site, meaning Breitbart, and Twitchy.com, they get the humor. The Huffington Post, their comedy guys have no sense of humor, and their headlines are lying. He says that the latter referenced John Lovitz's guest hosting gig for fellow Saturday Night Live Dennis Miller on Dennis Miller's radio program. He said, "We never said we wished more comedians would mock Obama, but that's the way the Huffington Post headline read." Lovitz also got called a racist for critiquing the president, even though he's never been associated publicly with any racially insensitive comment. In particular, it particularly galls him since one of his next projects is co-starring on Mr. Box Office, a new television series with mostly a black cast. He says, "I don't see the president as black or white. He's a man," Lovitz says, adding his frustration to his own party's rushing to slap a racist label on him. "What I find bizarre is how to quote liberal, how the quote liberals are bringing up race, saying shut the F up. I find them so close-minded. I thought you were liberal," he says. "You should be tolerant of everybody, whether they agree with you or not." So John Lovitz is realizing that they're not liberals. "Well, I could have told you that, there, dumbass." He goes on. Lovitz also takes issue with organizations like GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, which pounce on comedians for saying politically incorrect material on stage. They don't understand irony and sarcasm. They take what comedians say literally. It's ridiculous, he says. Lovitz hasn't received any specific feedback, good or bad, from his fellow comedians after the fallout from his Obama comments. They're not supportive, he says. The everyday people he meets had a more vocal reaction. "I can tell you how many people came up to me and thanked me," he says. Lovitz isn't wanting for work these days. He says his recent publicity hasn't hurt. His current projects include the upcoming Grown Ups 2, the aforementioned sitcom, his comedy club, and frequent stand-up appearances. He'll also appear on August 11th, along with fellow SNL co-star Tim Meadows, on an SRE arena in Syracuse. And he talks about his other stuff that's coming up. He said he's not blaming Obama for the situation. He's a registered Democrat, and his beef with the president doesn't mirror what Miller says on his nationally syndicated radio show. Lovitz is more outraged by Obama's soak the rich rhetoric, which he thinks is a cheap distraction from bigger issues. So here is this guy, poor John Lovitz, tells the truth, and everybody wants him dead. It's so freaking typical. They want him dead. And this guy is saying, he doesn't even understand it. He's saying, "You're liberal. I thought that meant tolerant of everyone." But now he's learning the hard way, it means nothing more than intolerance. That's what liberal means, John. Liberal means what it always meant. back in the 50s and 60s. Democrats, liberal means nothing more than you agree with what I want or you're a dead man. That's all it means, my friend. Agree with me or we'll poison your food. Do we have to start naming a new terrorist group? We've already got the Rainbow Jihad. Do we have to find a new terrorist group? Get with the program. Liberals are nothing more but haters. They're the biggest kind of haters. They're the haters that would see you in the street, punch you in the face. They'd slap your mother with a biscuit if they got the opportunity. They're vile, disgusting, and venomous. That's what liberals are. Agree with me or die. Don't you understand? That's what P. Diddy was talking about when he said vote or die. It was vote for John Kerry or die. That's what it was all about. Vote with us or die. Because we're going to send 50 Cent and Gwyneth Paltrow and P. Diddy out to shoot you. Okay, maybe not. Maybe not Gwyneth Paltrow. Come on. Gwyneth Paltrow. Real niggas in Paris. Remember that little picture she tweeted? And then all the Negroes came out and defended her. All the Negroes came out. What was it that Nas said? I slapped the ish out of somebody who dissed Gwyneth. She calls Kanye and Jay-Z real niggas in Paris, and Nas, who had an album called Nigga, says, I slapped the ish out of anyone who disrespects that white woman. God damn. God damn. I can't think it. I can't think it. It's so disgusting. Edward.
Hey, what's up, Reese?
Oh, as always, thank you for joining us. What did you want to chime in with today?
Oh, man, these liberals are just out of control. I'm telling you. Ann Coulter has it right that these guys have a mental disorder.
It is. It's clearly a mental disorder. It's clearly mental. But look at John Lovitz. He didn't even understand it. He said, I thought the whole deal about being a liberal was you tolerated everybody. This is a grown man. He's older than me. Even he doesn't get it. I mean,
well,
he doesn't even understand.
Liberals have shown time and time again that the only thing they're tolerant of is people who reflect their own viewpoints. Anybody else, you know, you're crazy or you're wrong, you're a hateful bastard.
Exactly. And the fact that there are people out there who are wishing him dead behind his views. I want to name one prominent conservative who has ever said, this guy should be killed for disagreeing with us. I know where you eat. I mean, it's ridiculous. And the only people who ever say this kind of rhetoric are liberals. They not only scream it towards conservatives, but they'll scream it towards their own, quote-unquote, announced liberals. They're the only ones that'll do it. And it shocks the crap out of me. I'm surprised that he doesn't get it. I mean, I knew this for eons, but I'm surprised that he's just getting it now. How could this guy be a registered Democrat? I wouldn't be stunned if this guy switches parties. Do you think it's possible?
Oh, definitely. Let him keep getting piled on by these libs. You know, he'll do, what's his name? The other famous comedian that switched parties, Dennis Miller?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
I think Dennis Miller was. But you know what? To Dennis Miller's credit, you know he's a member of Mensa.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's a member of Mensa. And, you know, that logic and that brain power, you know, that will never, ever keep you from recognizing the truth. You can't start claiming you're a member of Mensa and still agree with the idiocy of that ideology. It's impossible for you to continue to stay that way. Anyway, let's go to the top of the hour. We've got to get into this story. We got Rachel, some audio of Rachel, the Chick-fil-A employee who dealt with that barrage of insults by Adam Smith with Stuart Varney at 4 o'clock today. I'm going to play that for you when we get back. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio. After the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is August the 7th, 2012. Long lost cousin's birthday. Troy, if you're out there, happy birthday to you, bro. I miss you. It's been a long time. I hope to see you soon. I got to get into this audio. Because Mary, who personally thinks that this story is pretty much a dead issue, I'm playing it anyway because I wanted to hear from this woman only to reconfirm what it is that I said about her. Her name is Rachel. She has refused to give her full name because, not so much about the scrutiny, because she knows that there are people out there who will attack her. But she went out, did this interview on Neil Cavuto's show, Your World with Neil Cavuto. Stuart Varney was the host. He's from Fox Business Network. I think it's called Varney and Friends, on the Fox Business Network. Good guy. He does this interview with Rachel, and they talk about this whole thing that took place with Adam Smith. Again, if you've been living under a rock, Adam Smith, the CFO of Vonti, a medical equipment company, former CFO there, drives up during the Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day, drives up to the drive-through window, and berates Rachel at the window. And the video went viral, and the response was swift. And poor Adam Smith ends up losing his job, two jobs, in fact. He's got a young family, and this girl, I said, was a sweet young girl who did, an amazing thing. She did an amazing thing by sitting up there and dealing with this moron. And the way she dealt with him is to be commended. It had to be commended. And if anyone remembers, I said something to the effect of, let's see if I can remember what it is that I said. Something along the lines of that her parents raised her right, I think is what I said. Let me see if I can find it.
Okay, I'm going to move on. I got to find the audio. Give me a second here. Okay, that's me talking about the Rainbow Jihad. Here it is.
You see, only a jihad, only a terrorist group would attack an innocent human being. You know, like the innocent people who die every day in these car bombs and lunatics who strap bombs to themselves, killing innocent people who want nothing more than to go about their daily lives, make money, feed their family, go to school, make a good life for themselves. And then they're terrorized. They're wounded. Some killed. But it's all terrorism. And this member of the Rainbow Jihad, he decides he wants to videotape his viciousness. Adam Smith, with camera in hand, prepared to terrorize a poor girl, Rachel, beautiful white woman, beautiful young white woman, working at the drive-thru, who couldn't help but be courteous. Damn if her parents didn't raise her right. Damn if she wasn't trained well by her supervisors at Chick-fil-A. Don't lose your cool, Rachel. Sometimes people are going to be rude. Maintain your cool. Always be courteous. This girl should get employee of the month. But Adam Smith, Rainbow Jihadist, didn't matter to him how sweet this young lady was.
So that's what I said a couple of days ago. And the hell if I wasn't right. To hell if I wasn't right. Here's the interview with Stuart Varney today on Your World with Neil Cavuto. And listen to what she says in the interview about her upbringing.
On a day when thousands of people turned out for a day, one worker took the brunt of a driver's rant. That's when Adam Smith drove up to her checkout window and blasted her and the company she works for in a video that's since gone viral. Her name is Rachel, and the guy who recorded his own tirade has apologized. Will Rachel accept that apology? Well, Rachel is here, and only here, in her first nationally televised interview. She has asked that her name not be released, her last name. Her fiancé, Robert, has asked to be with her. Rachel, welcome to the program. I must say, it's very good to see you not through a serving hatch. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much.
Now, the young man in question here, Adam Smith, he did go back to the store, the restaurant where you worked. He tried to see you. You didn't want to see him at that time. I think you wanted to apologize then. Why didn't you want to see him at that time?
I was still in shock from the fact that the video he took of me was going viral on the internet, and I just really didn't know how to react when he came by the next morning.
Well, now, as you know, he has apologized, and I believe that apology has probably gone viral, too. Do you accept that apology?
I do forgive Adam Smith. I think he realizes how bad of a decision it was to make that tape. And I feel really sorry for him and his family and everything that's happened to him since Wednesday.
Now, some of our viewers have probably not seen the apology, so I'm going to run part of it, and I'm going to ask you to just react to it as we run it. Here we go.
Okay.
Rachel, I'm sorry for treating you poorly. Not because I feared losing my job or even that I actually lost my job. I'm sorry for treating you so inhumanely because I compromised my personal integrity. While I might not agree with everyone's views, I want to always treat the other person with respect. I didn't do that with you.
Well, Rachel, I know that you've seen that before. But what was running through your mind when you first saw that apology?
I was really glad that he came forward and made a statement, because what happened with when he came through the drive-thru wasn't so much about Chick-fil-A. It was about how one human being should treat another. And being in the hospitality industry, you deal with lots of difficult customers on a daily basis, and he's definitely not the first I've encountered, but he was the first that chose to videotape the interaction.
Yeah. Again, I'm going to run a little bit of the rant that he delivered to you at your serving hatch window. And again, I want you to give us your reaction as we go through just a part of what he had to say to you last week. Roll
okay.
It.
Is this my free water?
It is.
Awesome. You know why I'm getting the free water, right?
I do not.
Because Chick-fil-A is a hateful corporation.
I know, but
the corporation gives money to hate groups. I don't know how you live with yourself and work here. I don't understand it. This is a horrible corporation with horrible values. You deserve better. You deserve better. Rachel, you deserve better. Okay?
I hope you have a really nice day.
I will. I just did something really good. I feel purposeful. Thank you so much.
I must tell you, Rachel, that everybody I spoke to thought that you held your composure remarkably well. You did yourself proud.
Thank you.
How do you feel now?
I'm really glad that I could be an example of how we should serve each other. Obviously, his issue was with the political decisions of the top of Chick-fil-A Inc., not necessarily the individual stores, but people usually don't make the distinction. It was hard hearing those things about the attack about me and the company that I work for, but I'm just really glad that I was prepared and that the training and the upbringing I've had allowed me to get through that minute and a half.
Were you tempted to give back as good as you got? Because I suspect that young man wanted a harsh response to you, from you, rather.
Oh.
Were you tempted?
Oh, I'm sure he was looking for me to react poorly. It's not my personality. I would never do anything hateful in return to someone.
Well done. I'm just going to run a brief clip from Governor Huckabee and how he describes you and what you did. Go.
She was polite. She was nice. I think she's a hero. She's a hero because she took it. A lot of us would have wanted to reach over there, grab that guy in his car and pull him out and dump the water on him. She was polite and kind. She is the epitome of what Chick-fil-A tells their employees to be.
I think, if I might say so, I think the governor got it dead right, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Chick-fil-A is all about treating people with honor, dignity, and respect. We don't, like I said, we don't, you know, treat anyone differently, no matter what their background is or their political decisions or anything like that. I don't know if I'm a hero. I'm just a service worker doing my job.
You are to a lot of us, and I want to close with this. Would you tell us what you would like to say to Adam Smith now? Look in the camera and say it.
I forgive you. I really hope that America will forgive you and treat you with the respect that I chose to treat you with that day.
Rachel, we thank you very much for appearing with us today. This is your first time in national television. Look great.
Yes.
Handle yourself terrific.
Thanks.
Almost as well as you did in the serving catch. Thank you so much for being with us, and give our best wishes to Robert as well. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
It's our
pleasure. Bye.
There you have it.
They ought to make that girl a manager.
Make our manager give her a raise in the whole nine yards. But I said it. I called it. She said it was her upbringing and her supervisors who taught her how to deal with morons like this. Now, it wasn't a hard call. It was an easy call. It was pretty obvious that that's the way that you deal with people. This is a girl who was raised right. And she got in that position, and she still maintained her composure. Now, I'll agree with her, that whole Huckabee thing about she's a hero. I mean, she's not a hero.
Yeah, she's not a hero. I mean, come on, get a grip.
Yeah, let's not
she's
go.
She's as much as a hero as Romney is a murderer.
But the bottom line is that, look, like I said, Mary thought that the story was over, but what did you think of the interview? You thought it was worth it.
Listen,
at least hearing from her, right?
I thought it was worth hearing it. The girl is, you know, she's in the wrong industry.
Really?
She's a well-spoken girl. She handled herself very well. Maybe she ought to think about doing radio or TV or, you know, something like that.
Maybe even joining the corporate function of the company.
Yeah, I mean, she's a cashier. She needs to be bumped up to something else. I mean, obviously the girl's got a good head on her shoulders.
Right.
She knows how to treat people.
A damn good representative for Chick-fil-A.
A great spokesperson for Chick-fil-A. Maybe she should do commercials with the cows. I don't know. You know? Maybe she should be riding on the back of the cow. I don't know. Whatever. But she did really well. I think it was great that she turned around and said, oh, I forgive you, and I hope that people treat you with dignity. That was huge. And she's young. And it makes me feel good to see that there are still some of our youth left that have a brain and have common courtesy and decent and are decent human beings from what we can tell now, from what, you know, what we've seen and heard.
Here's the part that I really, really liked about her statement. She says that I hope that America can forgive you the way that I did. And I do have to say this. Because I always pay attention to language, folks. I always pay attention to language. That's a huge statement that Rachel made when she said, I hope that America can forgive you the way that I am. She's made a very strong statement here, folks, by saying, America has not forgiven you yet, Adam Smith. America, she's got America on her side. And she just made the call for everyone to give you a pass.
Well, right now she is the youthful American spokesperson.
Well, that's, well, no, 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 no. No, 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 no. Right now she's a person who was bullied. She was disrespected. And she was treated viciously by a jihadist.
I wonder how he would have felt if that would have been his daughter. Because doesn't he have a daughter?
That's right. But see, again, but here it was. She was treated viciously by a jihadist. She was violated because it was put on camera. And with all of that that went on, she still looked at the camera and told him, I forgive you. Which was big of her because she didn't have to. She could have just said, hey, you could go suck an egg.
And you know why? She was probably raised up in a Christian home.
Probably.
And that's what Christians do.
That's right. The Christians,
they forgive.
That's right.
They forgive people.
That's right.
Even if you have a difference in opinion, we still forgive you.
That's right.
So don't come over here spewing your hateful rhetoric, because we are not going to fall victim to that.
That's right.
You can do whatever you want to do. You can marry whoever you want to marry, but you ain't doing it in our damn church. That ain't happening. Not in my congregation.
So Edward, you do believe that the hero moniker is probably a bit much, but you got to get this. One of my favorite people of the week is Rachel right now. You have to admit that.
Oh, definitely. That guy. I'm thinking maybe that company Vontae should offer her Adam Smith's old job.
Why not?
That's a great idea.
Talk about slapping him right in the face. Vontae should give her that job.
And the school that fired him should give her a scholarship.
Why not? What was it? University of Arizona?
U of A. Yeah.
U of A. Why not? I think that they should really, really send a message. What a good... She's a great example. I wouldn't say hero, but she is a great example of Chick-fil-A's values and what it is. I mean, aside from that, the fact that she mentioned, because she could have just said it was my upbringing, but she also said it was her supervisors at Chick-fil-A who taught her how to deal with people who are rude and unruly.
And if you've ever gone into a Chick-fil-A and you've ever gone into a McDonald's or Burger King, totally different atmosphere. And McDonald's kids are hanging out. They're gossiping. They're being loud. They're beating the hell out of each other. You know, there's always somebody getting beat down outside of a McDonald's or in the bathroom of a McDonald's. Hey, do the lesbians and the gays go to McDonald's, or do you eat at McDonald's? Because they're beating the hell out of you in the bathrooms every time they get a chance.
That's
to.
Right. Wasn't that at McDonald's last year?
That transgender
guy, girl, whatever, was beaten by the two black girls?
Now, what kind of values are the people at McDonald's teaching their staff members? Because if you go into McDonald's, you are not getting the same service that you get at Chick-fil-A. And you ain't getting the same quality food either. And the food at Chick-fil-A is better. And the prices are right, you know, are almost equal to each other.
Are you guys familiar with the attack at a McDonald's here in New York City? Two young ladies, and I'm using the term loosely, got into an altercation with one of the workers at McDonald's, and he jumped over the counter and beat the snot out of them with a steel rod.
That's right. In fact, he was on parole, and he was making some time, but the video camera vindicated him because one of the girls came behind the counter to attack him.
Yeah.
And he ended up beating the girl viciously with the rod. And then they tried to make him out to be the villain for beating her as badly as he did. But his life was in danger.
Now, let me ask you guys something. Do you think that if this particular guy was working a drive-thru at Chick-fil-A, that this Adam Smith would have went up to the counter and berated him in the same manner?
Probably not. Probably not. But you know what? Even if he had, I believe that the guy wouldn't have had the composure that Rachel had.
Yeah.
I think it had to do with, and I hate to use the term home training, but, you know, it's her upbringing. Her upbringing and her personality.
But why not use the term home training? That is the world's problem today.
Mm.
Nobody has any damn training. You don't know how to act. You get out on the street and you start acting a damn fool. And they even act a fool in their own damn houses. Treat their mamas and their daddies, if they got one, like, you know, like they don't mean anything. They're nobody. And they deserve the world. I mean, it's so refreshing to see that some of our youth still has some kind of morals and some kind of home training and upbringing.
Did you guys notice this guy, Adam Smith, at one point in the video he had to say that, oh, and I'm not gay?
Yeah, what was that about? I kept asking
why aren't the gays jumping on him for denying being gay as if it's a disease or something disgusting?
Exactly.
Although he is.
But why aren't gays giving him a job?
Yeah, they have not come to his defense because they don't want any association with him.
But he was fighting for their plight.
Again, but remember, it didn't work. It didn't fare well for him. Remember, they don't want to be a part.
Nothing is faring well for LGBT right now. Nothing. You know, I told you guys know my obsession with Starbucks, okay? So I'll come out right now and say
that's right. They were supposed to have Starbucks appreciation.
Yes. So I'll come out and say right now that I told you guys that I was not going to go back to Starbucks. I refused to. So I broke down, and I've been there a few times.
Thanks, man.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
But I purposefully did not go today, not because I am anti-gay, but I purposefully didn't go today because I feel like the gays are out everywhere promoting Starbucks because of all of this crap that happened with Chick-fil-A.
Well, they were embarrassed by it.
And it's ridiculous. I went right to Wawa and got myself an iced coffee this morning. There was going to be no Starbucks for me. I wasn't going to do it. I should have went to Starbucks to see if there were lines, though.
Yeah, but the whole idea is the reason they're doing everything. I'm so glad you mentioned this, Mary, because this happened immediately after the interview with Rachel. I want to play this real quick. This is what happened afterwards. One of the reporters from the Daily Caller talks about the Starbucks deal that was supposed to happen today.
Starbucks that's supporting the gays and the dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, a group called Equally Wed looking to counter Chick-fil-A Day today with National Marriage Equality Day. It's urging supporters to patronize pro-equality businesses, in particular Starbucks. But unlike the Democratic mayors of Chicago, Boston, and D.C. who bashed Chick-fil-A, so far, no word of any Republican mayors looking to drive Starbucks from their cities. To the Daily Caller's Michelle Fields, who is following all of this. Michelle, any reports of large crowds at Starbucks for Starbucks Appreciation Day?
No, this is exactly like the disaster showing of the kiss-in that they had last week. They're trying to create another event that no one's showing up to, basically because I think they're a little jealous of how successful the conservative Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day is, so now they're coming up with this Starbucks Appreciation Day.
Do you think that the city mayors who tried to go after Chick-fil-A lost, and by extension, those who support traditional marriage won? Would you go that far?
Oh, yes, of course. I think that everyone agrees that their reaction was unconstitutional and completely illegal if they were really going to pursue those actions. And we saw so many people show up to support Chick-fil-A. So I think that they won. And I think it's important to note that today you don't see these Republican mayors saying, oh, we're not going to allow Starbucks in our district, or threatening Starbucks. Because first off, Republicans have read the Constitution. They know you can't do that. But also because the economy is the number one issue right now. What we should be focused on is getting businesses in districts, not trying to shut them out because of their views of gay marriage. We want constituents to get jobs. We want Americans to get back to work.
Michelle, would you agree with the following? Businesses should always obey the law, and executives should be allowed to express their opinions. Politics,
yes, of course.
Business, separate. Yes?
Exactly. Of course. Look, we have the right to express our beliefs, and it's not the politician's duty to decide what is an appropriate opinion to have and then use the power of the state to enforce those beliefs and those opinions. That's not what the government's for. Our founding fathers would be rolling in their graves if they see what's going on right now, that there are politicians trying to use the government to enforce their idea of what freedom of speech is, the appropriate freedom of speech.
Michelle, did you have a chance to see young Rachel there?
She was great. I think Chick-fil-A ought to give her a big raise. She is amazing. Really just a classy woman.
I don't know about you, but if someone said that to me in that situation at her age, I'm not sure I would have responded so gently and politely. I don't think I could do that.
Really? She was very classy, wonderful, yeah. Wonderful woman.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us again. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, ahead of the president's convention.
Anyway.
So this is, real quick, this is something I don't understand. No one is saying that Chick-fil-A is anti-gay. No one said that.
Except for the LGBT.
Yeah, exactly. They're not anti, nobody is anti-gay. There's gay people working for Chick-fil-A all over the country and everywhere that there's a damn Chick-fil-A. I'm sure that there's gay people being paid by Chick-fil-A. So Chick-fil-A is not anti-gay. They're just saying you can be and do whatever it is you want to do. But my personal belief is that you should not be able to get married in a church. You can have every other right that you want. You can get married. You can have insurance. You can have, you know, the last right to make decisions about your spouses.
Pull the plug.
You can pull the plug or not. You can make all those medical, you know, decisions. You can do all that. But you're not coming into the church and having a priest or a pastor or whomever marry you, because that's not something that the church believes in. It's not something, it's not in the, you know, it is totally in the Bible that that is not the right way, or, you know, that's not God's way. And people have a right to believe in God and not believe in God and follow God or not follow God. So you can't go forcing people just to say, okay, we've been following God's word for, you know, however many hundreds and thousands of years, and now we're just going to change because you want to come in here and get, and then this is what would end up happening. They would say, okay, the gays can come in here and get married. How many of those gays are going to attend that church that they get married to, that they get married in? How many gays are going to go to Bible study? How many gays are going to, you know, give money to the church that marries them? They're not going to pay tithes. They'll probably never see the church again. They'll just say, ha ha, we got you, asshole.
I think you nailed it. I don't think there's any other way to put it. I think she's right on point.
I'm point to a degree. I agree with you, Mary. And you are very, you're right, to a degree. However, we're talking about the same churches that won't marry a gay couple, but yet they'll, at every damn church fish fry, they're stuffing their faces with shrimp. And that's against the laws of the Bible.
What are you talking about?
Eating shrimp is against the law of the Bible.
Yes, it is.
What are you talking about, Willis?
Listen, cutting your hair
Listen, a man is not supposed to cut his hair or trim his beard. That's a law. That's a sin in the Bible. Wearing clothes with more than one type of fabric in it. That's a sin in the Bible.
What are you, JC, what Bible are you reading?
I will email you the scriptures. However,
he's
the Psalms
is whole
problem. But to read this, to solve this whole problem, anybody with a nice, decent amount of money to invest, why don't they just build what looks like churches and let gays get married in them? If that's
okay,
what they want to do, that's a lucrative business.
There's already gay churches with gay ministers and things like that. D.C. has, I think, 2 or 3 of them, okay? And the gays go, but they go to gay church. They don't go to straight church.
Well, straight church don't want to marry them, so go do your own thing in your own spot. That's
exactly.
All.
Exactly. Go let your gay minister marry you or whatever. I mean, I don't see why you can't do that. You just can't go down and apply. I just think that you can't go down and, like, apply for a marriage license or whatever. I don't know. I don't even know how that works in states that it's legal to get married. I don't know if you apply for a marriage license like a heterosexual couple does or what.
A lively discussion. Anyway, when we get back, we got more news, more views. Obama says he's not the president of black people in an interview he did with Black Enterprise.
We know he's not the president of black people.
I know.
That, but black people don't
know
that.
We'll break it down when we get back. Stick around.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going backwards. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gottavote.org to register now. That's gottavote.org.
You know we've got your back.
Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Reese on the Radio.
Have you missed Reese on the Radio recently? Well, don't worry. You can always go to the archives of Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Anybody heard from LaToya on this one? Isn't she eerily absent?
And she's the big mouth of the family.
She is the big mouth. She's dropping loose change. On the family. She's not into dimes. She likes quarters, half dollars. But that I find extremely odd that she's not around. She's got to get her act together. Get in here. I mean, I can't believe I'm actually saying this. LaToya, please come out and get this family in order. You're the only one left to do it. In all of this mayhem, you're the only person that seems normal here. And you're an extreme whack job. You're an extreme whack job. But through all of this, you're the only normal person throughout this whole thing, with the exception of the kids. Maybe not Blanket so much. But all of them, you look like the normal one.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
If I don't recognize your name, you're Rod Nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is, but she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. Michael Simon. Never forget him. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's him?
Right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
him. Because he's dressed like the chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, he is.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar. It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest types. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyist.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. She's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointed to the number two position at the Defense Department, a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Radio, 37 minutes after the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
91 days to the election.
That's right. That's like three months.
3 months and 1 day.
Wow. That's going to be huge. That is going to be huge. Damn, just 3 months. That could be out like nothing. That's going to be like, bah, done, over.
Oh, and I'll be done traveling to work.
Yeah.
We'll be done with this project in November.
Anyway. Good old Glenn Frey there. Anyway, okay, so I got to say one thing before I bring up this article that was in Black Enterprises today.
Oh, my God.
So this guy, his name is Derek Dingell. I swear to you, I wish I was ishing you. His name is Derek Dingell at Black Enterprises and does this interview with Barack Obama. Now, look, Barack Obama and most presidents aren't going to give places like Black Enterprises, Ebony, Jet, they're not going to give them real good interviews. You know, I went and read the article. It's literally, I mean, it couldn't have lasted 15 minutes.
If that's the whole
interview.
Article that I'm
no,
looking
it's,
at.
No, these are two questions out of eight.
Oh, okay. Because I'm like, that shit didn't last more than 15 seconds.
Anyway. Which is you in the cursor?
I'm sorry. The ish.
Anyway. So President Obama is addressing the criticism that he hasn't done enough for the Black community in an interview with Black Enterprises magazine, according to the Politico. The question was, how do you respond to criticism that your administration hasn't done enough to support Black businesses? Obama says, my general view has been consistent throughout, which is that I want all businesses to succeed. I want all Americans to have opportunity. I'm not the president of Black America. I'm the president of the United States of America, but the programs that we have put in place have been directed at those folks who are least able to get financing through conventional means, who have been in the past locked out of opportunities that were available to everybody. So I'll put my track record up against anybody in terms of us putting in place broad-based programs that ultimately had a huge benefit for African-American businesses.
And
does this sound
what
like
was
double
that?
Talk?
What was that?
I didn't hear an answer.
That you let the Mexicans and all the other illegal immigrants stay here, and now Black people that own businesses can fire the Black people that work for them now
and
hire
Mexicans
at a lower rate? Is that what you were talking about? Or hire gays at a lower rate?
I don't know what he's talking
about. I mean,
about.
I don't... I'm not the Black people, your president said he's not the president of the Black America.
He's
the president of Mexicans, gays, lesbians, and transgenders.
Apparently.
Because he ain't the president of the white folks either.
Yeah, he's
he just let his ethnicity go to the wayside.
Yeah, he's hitched his wagon to something completely different. Anyway, he was asked another question that said, the resurrected financial services industry hasn't stepped up in terms of providing adequate capital to small and minority-owned businesses. Is that a question?
No.
It's
a statement.
Yeah, anyway, Obama responds, there's no doubt that American taxpayers stepped in and pulled the banking industry out of the fire. It was controversial. It was messy. Ultimately, it was the right thing to do for the economy. But it is true that once banks got back on their feet, they haven't been as aggressive in lending to small and medium-sized businesses as we would like. And I've had conversations with the major banks about this issue. What they will say is that some of the additional regulations have impeded some of their capacity to lend. We do not see major evidence of that.
What banks did you sit down with?
Other than telling them that he was, the banks that he sat down with says that he was the only person that was standing between them and the pitchforks. That's what he said to the banks. He told the banks that. That was what President Obama said, because that's what the banks came out and said.
And
a meeting with him back in 2009.
And you put executive power to let illegal aliens that have no papers, no anything in this country, to stay here, and they can commit crimes and do whatever the hell they want
to
do. You put an executive order. Why don't you put an executive order on the banks that they lend people that can't really afford to borrow money, so that...
I did not see where you were going.
Yeah, why don't you put an... I mean, you put a damn executive order about everything else.
That's interesting.
Or maybe we should have the Mexicans go and rob the banks and distribute the money.
All right, we're not...
And then, no. They're not going to go to jail. I robbed a bank. I graduated high school. You know what? I am going to become a Mexican. I can pass for Mexican.
Yes, you do speak the language. Okay, I want to play this, and then I'll get the guy's response to this. Now, I just want to make that little point. Now, listen to what I'm going to. If you can you indulge me a little bit, Mary, while I go into a little diatribe here? I'm going to try to keep it down to 5 minutes, but I'm going to play this audio. After I make my little statement, okay? So just give me a second.
So you want me to shut up?
No, I don't even want to use the
You want me to pipe it down.
Just hold
put
on.
Put a cork in it. Callita la boca.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyway. So.
Oh, well, wait a minute. No, I'm kidding.
So, as you know, there has been this whole thing about releasing Mitt Romney's taxes. And they keep using the standard that George Romney, Mitt Romney's father, released 12 years, and that should be the standard, even though other presidents have only released 2 years' worth of taxes. In fact, in 2008, John McCain only released 2 years' worth of taxes. So the argument has been Mitt Romney should be transparent, release 12 years' worth of taxes, just like his dad did.
Was his father a president?
His father ran for governor or something.
But he wasn't a president.
But it's not the point, is that he believes that his father... Well, actually, I think his stepfather did run for president. At least he ran in the primaries. Some sort of...
What, in 1912?
No. Anyway, can I just finish my point?
Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, so Harry Reid has been making these charges that he got a phone call from Bain Capital. Somebody who's an executive at Bain Capital who told him that Romney hasn't paid taxes in 10 years. It hasn't been substantiated, and, of course, the press has jumped on it. And their argument is whether or not Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader, can make such an allegation like that without having to back it up. And so the President of the United States is being asked through his surrogates, Jay Carney, the White House press secretary, is one of the people they're asking. During a press conference today, I want you to hear what Jay Carney said. And then after I play it, then I'll explain to you why this is significant.
Let's hear why Jay Carney is getting paid $172,250 or something like that a year as salary. Let's hear why.
Okay. Thank you for letting me do this on my own.
But sorry.
Here's what Jay Carney had to say when he was talking about the argument about
you got me all riled up.
Mitt Romney and his taxes. Oh, come on.
Sorry, John.
I apologize. Why did that happen?
As I said yesterday, the president believes that the broader issue of tax fairness is very important to this campaign. The particular issue of a presidential candidate's willingness to be transparent about his or her background is important and is a matter of tradition that dates back to 1968, as you know, or the 68 election, actually, prior to 68. And, you know, I speak to his positions. There's for the campaign tit for tat, as at the purely political level, I refer you to the campaigns.
So I want you to hear that again. This is what he said. Pay very close attention.
The broader issue of tax fairness is very important to this campaign. The particular issue of a presidential candidate's willingness to be transparent about his or her background. Is important and is a matter of tradition that dates back to 1968, as you know.
So you heard what he said. A presidential candidate's transparency about his background.
Do you see my head in my hand? Because I'm baffled. If
this
the
is...
president's transparency is so important, or the presidential candidate's transparency is so important, I want to see the real birth certificate. I want to see your college transcripts. And anything else that you have not come forth with, my man.
I guess I don't need to do this whole monologue.
No, you sure don't. I mean, because I'm baffled.
You heard Jay Carney, the press secretary, say to himself how important it is and how it dates back to before 1968 that you know about the candidate's background.
How come there's nobody that can confirm that they ever went to class with Barack Obama?
Well, that's interesting because tonight on Hannity, and we're going to watch it tonight at midnight when it rebroadcasts. Tonight at midnight, Obama's classmate is on Hannity and says that he doesn't remember ever seeing Barack Obama in his political science class.
In his polyamory class?
political science class. I almost said that. Political science class. So wait a minute. So here's the president's spokesman saying that how important it is for the public to know about a person's background.
It's ridiculous. I mean,
you know why they won't question him?
Why?
Why they won't question Barack's background? The reason they won't question his background is because anyone that goes against him is considered a racist.
Well, we know that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes without saying.
But that's why they're not going to, that's why they didn't make a big stink about him, like Mary asked.
But how can they be a racist when he's clearly telling the Black Magazine or whoever,
yes,
Black run and Black own. He says, I'm not the president of Black people, but we got your back. I mean, you ain't the president of Black people. Well, get your ish together because we want to see your papers. Maybe you put executive order out and let all these illegal people stay here because you almost got kicked out of this country because you don't belong here.
Well, you know, you keep going into that whole illegal alien thing, and then you come right back and you do something profound. I'm no longer going to be afraid of what you're going to say next.
I mean, because I'm totally baffled.
You found a way to connect that.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. You gave rights to all these illegal people because your butt is illegal too.
Well, not only
are you illegally here in this country, but you're illegally the president of this country. Go figure.
Well, that's the interesting part about not releasing the transcripts. I believe the president has spent some $4 million keeping his Columbia and his Harvard and his Occidental records from being unsealed. Yet, when Jack Ryan was running against him for state senator back in 2004.
In Chicago.
Jack Ryan's sealed divorce records were leaked.
Yep. I remember that.
And if, for those of you who follow the TV show, not Deep Space Nine. What was it? A Star Trek Voyager? His wife was Jeri Ryan. Who played Seven of Nine, the Borg slash human being on, yeah, that was, and all of their really unseemly details of their divorce about going to swingers clubs and all that other stuff was revealed, and that's what made Jack Ryan actually have to get out of the race.
And why are his transcripts sealed anyway? Why?
Well, that's a big question. Like, why would they be sealed at all?
Exactly.
If it's important to see the background of Mitt Romney, why isn't it just as important to see the background of the President of the United States?
It's so ridiculous that they keep they want to pull blood from Mitt Romney.
Well, I'll tell you why.
And they're calling him a murderer. He's a tax evader. Everything else. I mean, for Christ's sake, you're the President of the United States of America. Go to the IRS. Call your homeboy at the IRS and say, yo, I need you to look this ish up. Did this dude pay taxes or not? I mean, you have access to that info, so go and get it.
Well, they're not going to do that. What they care about is public opinion. They don't care about facts. But
if you care about public opinion, you better shut your mouth.
Let me tell you why President Obama will not release the Occidental, the Columbia, and the Harvard transcripts.
Because there are none.
No, there are. There are.
I think that they are
similar to Elizabeth Warren's.
And I worked at a university.
Mm-hmm.
in the admissions field. And it's pretty easy to get a copy of people's transcripts.
Well, no, these are sealed. They're not even there anymore.
But why? When were they sealed?
They were sealed as soon as people started looking for them in the 2008 election. Or
2007. And who sealed them?
He hired lawyers to keep them from being released. He spent $4 million to keep them from being released.
No.
Yes. But I think
$4 million of whose money?
Listen. Barack,
well, wait. Of whose money? Whose money was that $4
million?
Taxpayers of Chicago?
No. I don't know who spent that. I don't know whose money it was. But look at it this way. Let's try it this way. Okay, hold on. Barack Obama came from not a meager background, but he came from a middle-class background. His mother was a vice president of a bank, right?
They don't make a whole lot of money. They weren't making any money back then.
He goes from Occidental to Columbia, goes from Columbia to Harvard, right? He had to pay student loans, which he admits. He and Michelle Obama, it took them some 8 years to finally pay off their student loans. So he got student loans. What kind of loans did he get? What kind of loans do you think somebody like him would get?
International loans?
a foreign exchange student loan. Very, very possible. What kind of loan did he get? What kind of loan was he eligible for? Could it be the same case as it was when we found out about his bio from his publisher? Wait, the publisher wrote
but
in
his
bio.
Think-
Hold on, let me finish. But the publisher wrote down, born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. Maybe his college transcripts say that he entered Occidental and Harvard and Columbia by saying that he was a foreigner.
But isn't there anybody that works at any of these three schools that would remember that and come out publicly say, check it out?
Why each and every one of those schools have the same ideology as the President of the United States, and they are there to protect them.
Well, you keep that ideology because when your damn university has gone down the tubes and you got to give people education, free education.
He'll be spending the rest of his life protecting those documents. He'll be paying for it for the rest of his life. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. He'll be protected. I mean, come on. If he really believes in transparency when it comes to Mitt Romney, you know, this classmate, you're going to see it tonight when it re-airs, if you haven't watched it already. He asked the same question. If Mitt Romney really wants to toss this back in Barack Obama's face and for them never, ever to bring up his taxes again, just go, look, I'm for 20 years of my taxes. You give me one college transcript. Just one. Just one. I mean, that's what I'd say. Give me anything and everything as far as a college transcript is concerned. Just give me one.
Well, it's got Edward's comments.
All right, we'll go to Edward. Edward, what are you having, late dinner?
Oh, no, I'm here.
So, I mean, do you believe there's any possible truth that the reason why he's hiding those transcripts is because of an Elizabeth Warren sort of situation where she marked herself down as 132nd Cherokee? Like, maybe he did this thing with his transcripts that he did in his bio where he said he was born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia?
I think his transcripts are being hidden because he didn't do that well in school. He's obviously a lazy pothead who only got where he is because of affirmative action. So this whole fantasy that the libs have been playing up that, oh, this is the most intelligent president we've ever had, would be shot in the water once you see his C's and B's.
You know what? That would be completely destroyed by the liberal media because then they would turn around and go, you know what, he may have been a poor student then, but look how intelligent he is today. That would absolutely be – they cover that up. You know, they whitewash that. It one thing. The thing that they would never be able to deny is that the president of the United States lied on his application. See, the Elizabeth Warren story gained attention because people kept – remember, if they said that she used a minority to get access to college, then that – you notice that the liberal media, places like the Boston Herald – and the Boston Globe, they jumped on that story. They never let it go away. Every day, you know, if you read the newspaper, it was more and more evidence that she was lying. If Barack Obama was actually putting on his college transcripts that he was Kenyan or that he was Indonesian, the fact that he was lying about that would really, really only bolster that whole birther thing, and they wouldn't have anything to stand up on.
And doesn't he have the biggest government job in the government? He's the president of the United States of America. And even when he held the Senate seat, when you become a government, you're a government employee, okay?
Right.
When I worked at the university, there were investigators that came in with release forms that did background checks. So where are those background checks?
No,
and different. You have to release your transcript.
No, very different. Because look at Harry Reid. Perfect example. Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader, is worth $10 million. He's only worked 2 years of his life in the private sector. 2 years. He's worth $10 million. He's worked his entire adult career in working in government. How did he make the money?
In the government.
No, he didn't.
Taxpayers.
No.
Investments.
Exactly. With investments. And he hasn't released one tax return ever since he's
been
working.
But I'm not talking about tax returns. I'm talking about college transcripts.
No,
your GPA, everything that you put in those applications.
In a government job, but not an elected job.
Oh, okay. So it's
an elected thing
job.
Is different.
Okay, okay. Well, they ought to make the same laws for elected people.
I couldn't agree more.
Absolutely.
Agree more.
I mean, my friend's mother works for the FBI, and every 5 years, you can expect her neighbors can expect for an investigator to be at their door, her background check so she can have her clearance. Every 5 years, they are there on time. Boop 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 boop. You know what's the deal? Blah 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 blah. Every year, every 5 years, they're checking every. So why shouldn't the president have to go through that too?
It's a different...
elected or not. Even for those people that are elected, it's even more important to do that. So that they can be vetted, and then we can make our decisions to vote for them based off of their...